welcome to episode 33 of the Zombie Girls podcast. We got a full house tonight. Very exciting. Unfortunately, Sarah's not with us, but aside from Sarah, we have a full house tonight. With me is Matilda.
Hello.
Jody.
Hello.
And making her triumphant return, Ariel.
Hi.
Woohoo! No technology can keep you down, girlfriend. Today, we're going to be talking about witchy movies with a pretty interesting double feature of Haxan, so that we can pretend that we're Artie, and The Witch, so we can pretend we're Artie again. So I'm really, really, really excited to talk about these with you guys. So before we get started with the movies, what do you say you guys let me know what you've been watching?
So one thing I started watching, and I'm only a couple episodes in, Rachel, I told you about this, is the Lizzie Borden Chronicles.
I saw the movie, but I haven't started the TV show yet.
I haven't seen the movie, but I've started the TV show. So it's, like, it's not good. Like, in my, yeah. I assume the movie was also not good.
No.
I mean, it had its moments, but it, yeah, it was not very good.
Uh-huh. No. So this is like, this is part of Lifetime television figuring out who it is, I think, and figuring out that that people don't watch it in a very serious way and that they want some camp. Unfortunately, they don't know what camp is.
Oh, dear.
Is kind of the problem. Like, they need some, like, kind of a drag consultant for this show, I feel like, for, like, trying to figure out what camp is. Because I feel like, you know, the, we also watched the V.C. Andrews, Flowers in the Attic.
Oh, yes.
Which was, like, a couple actors knew what camp was, but the directors, I don't feel like, understood what was going on.
Yeah.
And I want it, like, way pulpier than it is. And it has all the people and all the ingredients that should make it, like, really pulpy. It's like Christina Ricci and Claire Duvall are the sisters.
Yeah, they'd be perfect for doing something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm still hanging in. The clothes are very pretty, and it's so over the top. Here's the thing. It's like, it's so over the top, but it misses the camp piece. I don't totally know how to explain it. I kind of want somebody else to watch an episode or two to help me articulate it, but
maybe I'll check it out just to see, like, how it compares to the movie.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to know what you thought.
Do you like it?
I like it. Yeah, I was watching it because, you know, we stayed at the Lizzie Borden house.
Right.
Years ago when we went to, on our little New England creepy tour, which I'll also talk about Salem, I'm sure, at some point today. And so I wanted to see, like, did they use the house? How much of the real stuff was in there? No.
Not at all.
That's so sad.
So you're calling shenanigans on the historical accuracy of Lifetime TV's Lizzie Borden Chronicles.
Of their set, correct.
Although for one, I'm shocked.
They did,
I'm chagrined.
They did recreate the crime scene photos pretty well.
Oh,
and, like, the when they shoot the actual murders,
these crime scenes.
Yes, the mug I brought you with the crime scene photos on it. It's right here. They are going for all the pulpy elements of the story, though, which I like. Yeah. So I'm interested. If anybody else starts watching it, I'm interested to hear what you think.
I need to get on that. Anything else?
No.
All right. So cool. How about you, Jody? What have you been watching?
I really haven't been watching much of anything, except one thing I wanted to mention that came up a couple of weeks ago. I saw Deathgasm, finally.
Oh, yeah!
And I absolutely loved it.
Oh, good!
Good.
So good, so brilliant, and more than that, it kind of, like, reaffirmed my love of metal in a weird way, because, like, every so often, you know, you listen to so much, and you're not in the mood to listen to anything new, and you don't want to listen to anything old, and you kind of get into a bit of a slump. And then I watched this again, and it's, you know, it's made by people that love that kind of music and everything, and there's so many references, and so, all the music is really great. And I thought, oh, you know what? Yeah, I love that. And it's, yeah, it was kind of sweet, and it was funny, and it was really gruesome, and not really that scary, but it's just really fun. It reminded me of movies like Brain Dead or Dead Alive, and you know, Evil Dead 2, and that kind of classic sense of humor. Yeah,
but it was really, really great. It also has a weird sweetness to it.
Right, it's like both kind of sick and earnest. Which
is really
I'm so glad you liked it, because I worried you can overhype a movie, but I just...
Definitely.
And that one's sort of underseen, so...
I really loved it.
Yeah, I loved it. I saw it in this tiny cinema full of, you know, people that were either horror fans or metal fans or both, and everyone was just laughing along with it and cheering.
That is awesome. That is such a great way to see it.
Mm-hmm. It was the perfect setting, yeah. But that coupled with a podcast I recently started listening to called Fathoming Heavy, which is really, really good. They both kind of happened at the same time. That it's just kind of made me really enthused to listen to more music. That's kind of all I've been watching, really. I haven't had a lot of time for anything else.
Oh, good. Did you like the podcast?
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, good.
It was, again, just really sweet in a way, because I didn't really know what to expect. When you said it was interviews with musicians, I thought, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be that interested. I don't know the band very well. But it's not really about, you know, what album do you have coming out or what tour are you doing? It's, oh, so how did you get into metal? Oh, my next door neighbor was a fan of metal and, you know, I used to listen to music with him. And it was that kind of conversation, which it just feels like you're having the same conversation in the pub with your friend, just reminiscing about your youth and how you started listening to all this music. And I thought it was great. Very charismatic host and friendly sounding guests. Yeah, I thought it was great. Everyone should listen to that.
Oh, good. Yeah, I know the second one should be up on iTunes later today, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear it.
It's very sweet. It's a good one.
And Paloma makes an appearance on this one as well.
Yeah, we have our, like, co-host cat. who comes and sits on the guests for the whole time, so.
Nice.
Yeah. She kind of warms them up. It's good.
Oh, I love it. Awesome. Well, those all sound great. How about you, Ariel? What have you been watching?
I actually have not been watching that much. I've been super busy. And then, as I told you guys, I hurt my back, so I've been pretty doped up. And been watching, like, really crappy reality shows instead of anything decent. But I've also been reading Hell House. I'd never read it before, so I thought I'd give it a try. And it's actually pretty good. And I'm almost done, and then I want to go and watch, like, the movie versions. Because I don't remember, it's been a while since I've watched any of the movies, but I don't remember there being so much, like, ghost sex in them. Do you guys remember that?
I've never seen Hell House.
I haven't either.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a lot of it in the book. Like, a lot.
You know what's going to be funny is if we, like, pick up a copy and there's no ghost sex in it, and it was all just painkillers and Ariel's, like, dirty psyche.
Oh, man, I hope not. Oh, man. But other than that, yeah, I haven't really been doing anything too interesting, so.
Okay, cool. Well, I've seen a couple of things that I'll just talk about really quickly. The first one is a movie called Southbound. Have any of you guys heard of this?
No.
Okay, it's a new anthology from, some of the people behind VHS, which was a franchise that I was super into for the first two movies, not the third one. But the first two were pretty, especially the second one is great. That Safe Haven section is
so good.
Fucking dope. And so this is a new one. It's completely separate from it. Like, in VHS, the idea is they were all sort of accumulated because they were, like, these VHS tapes that were in this person's house, and maybe they're possessed. Who knows? This one is connected because, like, all the stories actually connect. They actually interconnect. One sort of bleeds into the next one. And they all take place in this sort of, like, desolate stretch of road that has, like a little tiny isolated creepy town. So, like, it opens with these two guys, and they're, like, covered in blood, like, driving down a road, and they're, like, obviously something shady has happened, and they don't tell you what it is. They're just sort of being followed by these really creepy, well-designed looking, like, demons that are following them, but they're not, like, on their heels. They're just sort of, like, you can see them floating in the distance and, like, getting closer and closer. And then there's sort of resolution around that. And then it leads into, like, another, the second one, which is this all-female sort of rock band who have broken down on the side of the road and end up hitchhiking and getting into some trouble. Three more shorts that kind of all sort of lead into the next one. It's really good. It was on my radar because the second one about the band is directed by a woman. And we're, you know, right in the tail end of Women in Horror Month. So this I've been, like, really kind of keeping on top of, like, lady business. And take that however you want. It's really good. It's actually, it renewed my enjoyment of anthologies. It's cool because it's set in this world that I would like to see more stories in. You know what I mean? Like, I could see this becoming, like, a little bit of a franchise if it gains in popularity. It's on video on demand now, so it's easy to see. And I definitely recommend checking out Southbound. The other thing I've been watching is Hulu has adapted the Stephen King novel 11/22/63.
Oh, yeah, I saw that on there.
Have you guys read that or seen? Okay, so there's been two episodes so far. There's the third episode's tomorrow night. And it's James Franco, so it could go either way. And he has some really bad fake facial hair in the first episode. Like, he has, like, the total, like, Van Dyke situation. Oh. Uh-huh. But, like, it looks like someone cut it out of fun fur and just, like, stuck it on his face. It's very distracting. And, you know, Rachel Wig Cop is also Rachel Bad Facial Hair Cop, so I am on that shit. Anyway, so he's sort of like this failed writer who's like teaching and like he just got a divorce. He's sort of down on his luck. And he hangs out at this diner where he like there's a whole thing that happens. But he realizes that in this diner, there is a portal to the year 1960. And it's like this one specific point in time. And like the guy that owns the diner has this like, you know, his mission has been to go back and to prevent the Vietnam War from happening. And he feels like the sort of the inciting incident was the assassination of JFK. And so he's been spending all these years trying to go back, find out what really happened and prevent it from happening. But like time does not want to be changed. So there's sort of like all these supernatural forces or natural forces that like are pushing back. And in this, his case, finally, the last straw was like time basically gives him cancer. So, like, terminal cancer. And he kind of, like, basically recruits James Franco to go back and take over his work. And the way time travel works is, like, you go back to this point and, like, you have to sort of live through the era, like, normal chronologically. And when you come back through the thing, only 2 minutes will have passed in our time. And it resets. So, like, if you go back again, it will reset whatever you did, right? So he decides to go ahead and do it, and he starts investigating, and shit starts going sideways for him. So he decides to give up, and in the second episode, he goes and he kind of tries to thwart this mass murder. I don't know, it's really interesting. I don't want to talk too much more about it, because it is actually pretty good. Because, like, with Stephen King adaptations, there is no middle ground. It's pretty fucking terrible or pretty amazing.
Like James Franco.
I think probably maybe the Green Mile somewhere in the middle there. And James Franco too, you're right. Like, he's either really great, Freaks and Geeks, or really bad, everything else. I mean, he's very handsome. He's just a weirdo. But this is actually really good. He's good in it. The production design is amazing. Like, if you love, like, 1960s clothes like I do, like, looking at all of the cool vintage stuff is awesome. So, yeah, definitely a surprisingly high recommendation so far for 11/22/63. And the last thing I've been watching is just my general, like, I'm trying to make everybody watch this because it's so good and I feel like it's underappreciated, is the show The 100. We're, like, five episodes into season three. And this show is so good, you guys. It's so good. And I think it gets a bad rap because, A, it's on the CW, so it's like the Beautiful People channel, the Beautiful Teenager channel. Sorry, the Beautiful 30-Year-Old Plain Teenager channel. Let's keep it real. And the first few episodes are rough. They're bad. They're just bad. There's no way around it. Unfortunately, you have to watch them because it sets up the whole, like, mythology of the series. But I do think that has turned a lot of people off. Or when they get recommendations to watch it, they go and watch it, and they're like, this is shit. So that's why I'm saying, you have to fight through those first three episodes. Episode four, it starts to get better. But where the show has gone now, like, it is a completely different show. And it's so good. I think it rivals any other, like, sci-fi or fantasy show on TV. Like, it's not quite Game of Thrones level, but it is close. It is so good. I'm a little mad about what they're doing with one of the characters that I really like this season. Like, I kind of want to smack this person upside the head because they're doing really dumb shit. But, like, for instance, one of the things that's so great about it is, like, it is, like, chock-a-block with awesome female powerful characters. And not, like, the strong female character. Like, really complex, multi-layered, powerful women.
And multiple at the same time.
Yeah. It's just a really cool show. And I think there's a lot of women in the writer's room, and that shows. You know what I mean? Because they actually write interesting, complex women.
I'm only in the middle of season two, but I feel like they allow her to make those difficult decisions without spending tons of time in with the camera right on her face with her emoting.
Yeah.
Which is what I feel like would happen in other series. Like, that's usually how they do that for women, and that's not what's happening here. She's just moving along.
I can't wait for you to see the finale of this season. Something happens in it that's so terrible.
Yeah, you told me about it, like, after the first season came out, and I watched the first season and really liked it, and then I don't know why I never went back to it.
You should really go back. Instead of...
I ended up really liking it as it went on.
So, if you have seen The 100 on your Netflix and overlooked it, give it a shot. It's actually pretty fucking great. So that's it. That's what I've been watching. All right, well, should we talk about our first movie? Hexen, Witchcraft Through the Ages.
Yes, definitely.
I actually feel like I wish I had watched these movies in reverse, because this was a very educational experience.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
There's some things that happen in the Witch that are kind of covered in the mythology
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
And I know that the Witch, so much of that movie was taken from, like,
folklore and
But yeah, this was a good pairing, is my point.
Okay, Hexen, Witchcraft Through the Ages from 1922, directed by Benjamin Christensen. Synopsis. This Danish silent film was a fictionalized documentary about witchcraft from the Middle Ages, the Salem witch trials, and then to the modern era, with its similarity to Hysteria. Each section is shown through reenactments in the 1968 cut with a voiceover from William Burroughs. That's the version I watched too. But yeah, I think I saw the longer silent version before. I guess it's longer because they have the time with the text in between each part.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything else in there that makes it longer too.
Which
it was long.
Yeah.
I watched
the original one, actually.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It felt pretty long, even the short one.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys both watched the original.
The original, and then you guys watched the William Burroughs one?
Yes, I watched the one with the jazzy soundtrack to it. Like, I like all the sexy percussion. Like, I see what you did there.
What happens when the devil's doing the, like, sexy, sexually aggressive butter churning?
There is a really aggressive butter churning in this movie.
That was pretty crazy.
So, okay, Jody, this is kind of you and Sarah coming up with this idea. So let's start with you. What did you think of this movie?
I saw this maybe a couple of years ago, and at the time I really, really liked it. It kind of felt like something that you just need to almost switch off and watch, kind of like a music video, because it's the one version at least is silent, and you just sit and you just get absorbed in the music and the images. But part of it I just found really cute in a way, where there's a picture of this drawing of a witch getting hanged or something, and then it'll cut to the text and it'll cut back, and there's a little pencil pointing to the witch being hanged, just in case you didn't know which bit you're supposed to be looking at.
Here are the iron rods.
Yeah. And then I guess because it's made in 1922, it just obviously it's very dated, and sometimes I like old movies and I like slow movies, but some movies are really old and really slow, and I struggled with this a little bit on the second watch, in the same way that I did with stuff like The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and Nosferatu, just where you kind of have to be in that right mood to really get that kind of old style of the movie. I know, Era, you really like movies like that, so maybe you got on with this a bit better.
But... No, see, that's the thing that surprised me. I assumed I would, because like black and white and silent movies are kind of my thing, but I found it really hard to watch, actually, and especially the beginning section where it's moving so slowly, and he's just like pointing at pictures with the pencil. I mean, it's stuff you can see, and he's like, he spends so much time kind of just like tapping the page with the pencil.
Yeah.
I found that really hard to get through. I thought it was easier like the next section where stuff was kind of happening, but even that, I think part of the problem was it's not like you're learning new information, and it's being presented in a way that is really slow. So I just had a hard time getting into it.
Yeah, and at times we're learning old information too, like at the very end when they're talking about, you know, witchcraft, and nowadays we recognize this behavior as hysteria, and now we're treating it accordingly.
I actually really loved that part, because the whole time I was watching it, I was like, I cannot wait to hear Matilda talk about the hysteria.
Well, how they were treating hysteria in 1922 is not awesome either.
Exactly. It's kind of ironic that, like, oh, and nowadays, you know, we know that's silly.
And it's
right, nowadays we just plunge them in cold baths and hang them at the end.
What did they call it? It was like a therapeutic shower.
Yeah, it's
something
a cold
like
shower.
That, yeah.
It's a cold shower.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. I was like, is that like
Like, have you seen?
Well, I know that one of the treatments with hysteria is like old school vibrator, and I was like, is that what they mean by therapeutic shower?
No, like you see it even in. I mean, it's a big asylum thing that was going on through the 20th century. Is the kind of like tepid water bath. You even see it in, like, I think Girl Interrupted, I think Winona Ryder's in like a tepid water bath talking to the nurse at some point, right? Yeah. And if you see kind of the architecture of old Kirkbride asylums in the US, they have these big tiled rooms with lots of like clawfoot tubs everywhere to treat the lady hysterics.
Okay, so what did you think overall, Jodie?
I think I liked it overall. It's just a strange experience because it's pretty old, and I think the music in this version that we saw, Rachel, which is very jarring. I think I prefer the kind of like classic score a lot more. It seems like it would lend itself well to being rescored by, I don't know, like bands these days, like a bit like something doomy or something kind of synthy. I think
synthy. That's interesting.
Yeah. Is this the first time you
like a disaster piece version? Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh my god, yes, that would be good. Yeah. Is this the first time that you'd seen it?
Me, oh yeah.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before either.
What'd you think, Ariel?
I honestly didn't enjoy it that much. I mean, there were definitely parts of it that I liked, and a lot of the imagery was really cool. But like I said, I just couldn't kind of get into it that much, so... Mm. I think, I don't know, I'd maybe recommend people to see it like one time, but I don't think it's something I'll revisit. Although maybe that version you guys were talking about that has the different score and narration.
You need to watch the Jodie and Rachel cut. We'll rescore that shit.
Yeah, right?
Nice. Yeah.
It's in the public domain. We probably can, you know.
That does seem like kind of like a fun project.
Yeah. I actually, when I was watching it, kind of had the impulse to turn the sound down and turn on some other music to see if that would keep me a little more interested than I was.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's, I liked the images of like the devil, I thought was really cool, and the different demons, and it was interesting seeing like the little old lady being kind of interrogated by the monks or whatever. I thought that part was really, you know, was well done. Them kind of torturing her and making her speak. And didn't she say something too about like the other women biting the devil on the butt? Or did I?
Oh, yes.
Kissing. Kissing.
Passionate. I like the interstitial that's like, she kissed the devil's arse passionately.
Yes. Well, and then there's a very long scene of just women lined up.
It's like a
up.
Buffet line of ass kissing.
It's like a receiving line. It's really great. I really enjoyed the devil.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you think, Matilda? Part,
I think.
I had a little trouble getting through it, but fair. I don't think it's a reflection of the movie so much as me. Like, I sometimes have this with old movies where I'm like, I'm not very cultured because I'm having a hard time hanging with it at a certain point. And I think especially when they started to reuse footage in the reenactments, there was one part where, like, they were all running to the old woman in that reenactment with the lead at the bottom of the bed. There was some stuff that was reused. So there were parts of it I was really into, but then parts of it it felt a little repetitive at a certain point. And I was kind of going in and out or doing something else around the house. Like, I think I was folding laundry while I was looking at it. And then I was like, I'd look up and there'd be something about ointment. I'd look away and then we're back to ointment. Like, just a lot of ointment. A lot of ointment, which, you know, was a main plot part, right, about the ointment that, which I had no idea. It was super interesting to me that ointment is the thing that makes you fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd never heard that either.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good lesson.
That part where they're trying to figure out if the woman's, or the guy is, wait, who is it? Yeah, as a witch, and they use the lead, like, pouring it into the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it comes up with this, like, squiggly blob of lead, and they're like, yep, witch.
Yeah.
So I think maybe I was a little more into it. I mean, it was definitely more challenging than, say, Deadpool. And I think going for the shorter runtime, even though it had the weird jazz soundtrack, was probably the way to go, because I didn't get a lot of repetition, and I'm guessing that's probably some of what got cut.
I think
probably, I think all the images at the start are played twice because they'll show the image and then the text and then the image again with a pencil pointing to the bit. So I think that probably increases the runtime quite a bit.
Yeah, I think they cut straight to the pencil.
And even the reenactment vignettes felt like they were kind of repetitive.
Well, I mean, there's about 30 minutes difference in the runtime. So I'm guessing that's probably where a lot of that went. So I appreciate that. And it doesn't hurt that was the one that was free on Prime. but it was a movie that I feel like, obviously, there's a certain... Like, it's so old that, like, I don't have the, like, context, like the cultural context to and I have an iPhone and I have flashing lights all around. I had a lot of trouble focusing, which is kind of, we'll talk about it when we get to The Witch, but like seeing that movie in the theater is the way to go because it forces you to kind of really, you know, shut everything else out and like completely be immersed in it, which totally is, I think, essential to enjoy that movie.
So I think
maybe I would have got even more out of this if I was, like, forced to really focus. But that being said, the visuals in this are so strong and compelling that I was into it. Yeah. And I, like we've talked about, like, I want a new cut. I want a super cut of it, like, cutting out, like, all the fat. Just, like, the weird shit set to, like a really cool, like, disaster piece or goblin or some sort of doom metal. Yeah. Something like that. Because
that sounds amazing.
That would be great.
There's a reason that this movie has survived all these years, and it's because those reenactments, particularly anything that involves the devil, are just so fucking awesomely weird. They're, like, the whole line of people kissing the devil's ass, and, like, him, like, choking out monks, and nuns going crazy with erotic desire while the devil watches on. I mean, like, that shit is cool as hell.
Yeah,
you're right. That part is really great. And I think maybe if I hadn't watched the really long segment at the beginning, I would have enjoyed that even more.
Yeah.
So, like, the content is strong. The pacing is the problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to think. It's also, like, really kind of subversive for 1922.
It really is.
Yeah, it's really lewd in places.
Which
it's really lewd, yeah.
Yeah, even just the butter churning itself seems like it would be kind of shocking at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like... Right, but then I, on one hand, like, it's very suggestive, but I also kind of feel like they went for it so hard that, like, we're assuming it's suggestive.
I mean, I just loved that devil, the butter churning devil, which I think was a different devil than was in other vignettes sometimes.
Yeah.
Well,
I also like the giant devil that opened up and turned out it was, like, doors for people to walk through. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, part of me was like, where is the drugs? But then also, I don't really want to watch that on drugs. But it, like, if you are a person that can handle that kind of thing on drugs, this would be so awesome. I don't know. I mean, like, we don't get stuff like that now because the technology has moved so much that everything is CG or, like, really advanced practical effects, which is freaking awesome. But, like, they almost look like wood cutouts that have come to life, and it's not, I don't know that that was an aesthetic choice so much as, like, that was the like, technology they had in terms of practical effects then. But it lends it a certain charm that I don't think we could get away with now, because it would just, like, we're so caught up in, like, things looking realistic that, like, the super stylized result of what they had then just wouldn't fly with a modern audience. But I love it. I think it's really, really, really cool.
I did definitely perk up when they got to the torture section.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Like, all the interesting torture elements and collars and whatever those...
The thumb screw.
In the version I saw, he talks about using the thumb screw on one of the actresses in the movie. Is that in the the other version,
kind of
too?
Grinning.
There was... Okay, I'm going to tell a little story. When I was on a train... like, on the way, we were, like, heading home from Scotland, and we were in London at this point, and we were on a train with this guy who had, like, this huge, like, bandage situation. It's like a military dude. And because my sister can't fucking help herself and has to talk to everyone, we ended up in this conversation with this guy, and he was someone in the military, and his job, it was, like, this was shortly after 9/11. So his job was to teach his fellow soldiers, like his, he was a instructor, and his job was to teach them how to withstand torture.
Oh, jeez.
And one of the things they were doing was thumb screws. And he, his belief is, if you can't, you have to show them the reality of what it does. So he actually had them do the thumb screw to him.
Oh my god.
And like his thumb was like demolished underneath all these bandages.
Oh. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you have to do that with like every class then? I mean, it seems like eventually you'd have no thumb.
I mean, I feel like that's a one and done, right? And then, like, yeah, then when he started talking, the conversation devolved from there, and then we regretted talking to him. But I still, whenever I see a thumb screw, I always think about this dude with, like, his fucking mangled thumb on the train.
Yeah. Wow.
That was a crazy trip. A lot of weird stories. That's where I made out with the Duke. Like, that was the, that was
weird. So many crazy stories.
It was a weird trip. Anyway.
Not every British guy is a Duke, Rachel.
Well, I know. I don't even know if this guy was really a Duke, but he said he was a Duke. It was like a whole thing. I mean, I didn't meet him like, you know, in the palace or whatever, but he was like, you know, I'm a Duke. I'm an illegitimate Duke. And I was like, come here, I'm drunk. Where were we?
Anything we didn't cover? I guess I'd recommend to horror fans to check it out as a, you know, just interesting old movie.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys had this thought at all, but like, when I was watching and seeing, like, sort of the, what we all agree are, like, sort of the horrors of, potential horrors of religious fundamentalism and, like, rejection of science, like, and we're in the middle of, like, an election year. Mm-hmm. Like, I was kind of like, oh, no, I don't want to go down this road.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it felt a little, it had a little, it was a little more impactful in our current
right
political
now.
Climate.
Right.
Did that occur to either any of you guys?
Not at the time, but now that you mentioned it, yeah, definitely.
Like, I kind of feel like everyone who's thinking, like, about voting for Ted Cruz should watch that. Sorry, Jeff.
And I'm all down and we can watch it.
And the witch.
It's a good idea.
All right, so enough politics. So the second movie we watched, and probably really kind of honestly the thing that kickstarted this whole episode, is the new film The Witch in theaters now. It's for now. We'll see how long it's there.
Yeah.
This movie was a movie that did incredibly well with critics, and then they had like the audience response. It's called like a cinema score, I guess, and it has a really low cinema score.
I noticed that on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, you saw
like
that?
Yeah. 89% critics and like 50-something percent audience.
I can kind of see that just from the response and the...
Matilda, would you mind taking the synopsis on this one?
Sure. Right. So The Witch stars Anya Taylor-Joy, Ralph Ineson, and Katie Dickey. It's directed by Dave Eggers. The movie's set in... Oh, sorry. Not Dave Eggers. Robert Eggers.
Who's Dave Eggers?
I feel like a humorist. Oh. Oh my god, that's terrible. All right. He's like a humorist on like 60 Minutes. Anyway. Wow. The oldest person ever. It's like, he's like an Andy Rooney type thing. Oh. Okay. All right, so this movie's set in New England in the 1630s and opens with a family being banished from their town and sent to live in the woods. Thomason is the oldest daughter. She has a brother who's a couple of years younger, and then twin brother and sister who are probably about 8, and a baby infant brother. One day when she's on the edge of the woods, her baby brother disappears, taken by a witch. The family starts to crumble, and because there's a lot of dysfunction in the family already, when strange witchy things begin to happen, suspicion takes hold, and they all begin to turn on Thomason, who the twins accuse of witchcraft.
Yeah, so, Matilda, what did you think of The Witch?
I really liked it, and I'm really excited to talk about it, because I also kind of don't know what I saw. like, it was, this movie made me more uncomfortable in non-horror scenes than any movie that I've seen in a very long time.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it has a great atmosphere, especially because of the natural lighting and how claustrophobic it feels in their home and even out in the woods.
Yeah. And there's a level of kind of like close-ups on all that make all the body, like regular body stuff, really horrifying. Mm-hmm. Like even just like the twins breathing fast or like somebody moving their hair or something. Like, it's just horrifying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a lot to talk about, and I'm very excited to hear what you guys thought about it.
Awesome. Ariel, what did you think of The Witch?
I really enjoyed it. I actually took my dad to see it last night, and he really disliked the movie, which was interesting.
Oh, really?
Because, he's the guy who turned me on to horror movies, and usually we have the same taste, but he really dislikes movies that are just kind of bad thing after bad thing after bad thing keeps happening, and there's no way to kind of fight back against it, and then it has this real dreary ending. And those kind of movies he tends to not like, whereas I like those kinds of movies too. I thought it was great. I thought the acting was really amazing. Like, a lot of time when they use the kind of old-timey language and all the flowery language, it comes off as phony and not natural, and like you're not actually in that place. You're in the modern era with people pretending to do it.
The Village.
Right. That's a very good... That's a good one.
Yeah.
But this one, it felt more authentic, like you were really there in that place with them. And that claustrophobic setting really helped that out, too.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I loved this movie. I know that it was not a feeling that was shared with many of the people in my theater. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of grumbling as the movie, as the credits rolled, like, what the fuck was this? That's it? There was a lot of, that's it?
There was like a group of, I'm going to guess, like 13-year-old boys coming out of our theater, like, well, that was a waste of 2 hours and $12.
Like, which the same thing. They were like 14-year-old guys, like five of them sitting in the row right in front of me. And they got up out of their seat like a million times because they just didn't care about the movie. So they kept going back and forth. And then they left, even finished with huffing about it.
Yeah, this is a movie that rewards patience.
Definitely.
Yeah. And you have to be patient with it, because in order for the sort of horror aspects of it, which kick in kind of in the fight, well, kick in later in the film, like, you have to have invested and like gone with the atmosphere and like all that sets up the impact for the later scenes. Mm-hmm. And so if you're checked out, when you get to those things, which, I mean, if you were to just take a clip from this movie, like, even the most frightening things out of context would not necessarily be that creepy. But it's all the setup that happens in those slow parts and the like, slow increase of tension that happens during this that makes those things pay off.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, this is definitely, like I said, this is not a movie to watch if you have an iPhone next to you. You know what I mean? Because if you allow yourself to be distracted, it will feel like a waste of 2 hours, yeah. I think. Because there isn't, like, a big whiz-bang payoff at the end.
Yeah, and there's not also, like, a big plot to it. It's, you know, things happening within this family, but there's not that big plot arc, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of maybe has a tendency to turn people off, too. But just watching this family kind of fall apart and devolve and blame each other was really interesting, and they did such a good job with that. Even the little kids, the twins, were awesome.
Twins were really great.
Yeah.
They were the creepiest kids I've seen in a movie in a very long time.
Yeah, just chasing that goat. What did they
call
him?
Black Phillip?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I am very familiar with Black Phillip. He has been haunting my dreams. Oh, no. I saw this movie.
Is this
no
the nightmare joke. You had? Was about Black Phillip?
Oh, yeah. I had a dream. Okay, so I'm going to skip to this and then we can come back. Because, I always have to tell my little tangential stories. For like 3 nights after I saw this movie, every night I had to keep waking up all night to like turn on like Netflix. I was like, Bob's Burgers.
Oh no.
Because I kept dreaming that Black Phillip was in my face whispering to me.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Which was not great. And at one point, like, a pillow had kind of like fallen over my face. And so like it had blocked out some of the screen. So as I was waking up, when there was still something in my face, I was like, it was like through the pillow on the floor. All suspect.
I wonder if that's so effective then, like, if part of that got in because there's no visual of him talking, right? There's just the voice.
That could be.
Right, so that it's just, like, it's, and when you're watching a movie, it's just kind of around you and behind you because you're not looking at him in front of you.
Probably.
Yeah.
So, well,
I love
here's
part the this was so unexpected, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I had this dream, and I saw this with two of my other girlfriends, Mars and Beerly, and I told Mars about it, and I was like, oh my god, I keep having these fucking dreams about Black Phillip, and she was like, oh my god, Me too. She also was having dreams that Philip was whispering to her. So I was like, oh no, 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 no. This is not good. This is not good. So I was like, okay, if Beerly also is having these dreams, like, we really are, we're screwed. Like, the devil got us, like, ring style. Like, you watch the movie and then he comes for you. So I contact Beerly and I'm like, listen, we're having, Mirrors and I are both having this dream. Are you dreaming about Black Phillip? And she's like, no, I slept like a baby. I was like, oh, thank God. And then I realized she's the only one of us that's been baptized. So, like, basically what I'm saying is, like, I like butter and I live deliciously. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I like a pretty dress and I want to see the world.
Can I ask, are you kind of susceptible to religious horror stuff?
I think I am. I, right now, like in the light of my living room with a friend, you know, beside me, I say no. But in the middle of the night, when I'm alone...
That's so interesting.
That's when the devil comes a creeping.
Yeah, like having no, having not been raised in a church, I'm not susceptible to it.
Oh, yeah. I think they get you young.
Right, yeah.
You know,
and it's scary. Well, those are scary stories. Like, yeah. You know, Christian stories are scary stories for kids at a certain level.
And I actually feel like that gives good context to this movie because, like, what made these witch stories so impactful is, like, the people in that era, like, believed they were real. Mm-hmm. Like, that the witches were real, that the devil was walking amongst them in the woods, you know? The sense that I have is that that person that I am at 3 a.m. when I'm alone and I'm afraid that Black Phillip is whispering to me in my sleep is, like, how they felt at noon on a Wednesday.
Sure.
You know? Like what must life be like living under that kind of cloud of fear and and superstition? Mm-hmm. That's a very frightening place to be. And you can kind of go, like, all right, I can see how that would turn into the Salem witch trials. I don't think it's the right thing to do.
No, but you can all that
follow the little drum, like the drum breadcrumbs of logic. Mm-hmm. I almost said drumsticks of logic. I try to say drumsticks of logic like 3 times.
That's your bad teenage punk band.
Yeah, drumsticks of logic. I'm going to put socks on my boobs.
That would be amazing.
That would be actually kind of amazing. I think we all really liked it.
Yeah.
One of the themes running throughout this, which I thought were kind of interesting or disturbing probably, is like the weird suppressed sexuality that bubbles up in certain ways in this movie. Like, the isolation leading to, like, the younger brother, like, looking at Thomason, who, by the way, like, totally is suspect, like, largely because of the fact that she is, like, in puberty.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then also there's this, like, the weird dynamic between her and her father. Like, I know it's probably, in context, fine, but, like, from a modern perspective, when she's, like, undressing her father.
Yeah, or the scene where he, like, she runs outside and he kind of cradles her, you know, against his chest.
I was like, where are we going with this? Where are we going?
That's interesting. I actually didn't get... I was not uncomfortable with the relationship with her and the dad.
Was it undressing the father?
Mm-mm.
Like, even, I don't
know. No, because, like, that's her labor. I just feel like that was a labor thing. But
you know,
I definitely
see that. I think it was just because the way they filmed it a little slowly and really focusing in on her hand.
I do feel like the filmmakers have some kind of thread, which I really enjoyed, or the way that I read this thread was that, like, the threat of women desiring things was a huge threat culturally at that point. And so, like, there's all different parts of that, right? There's the biblical thing with the apple. Yeah. There's, you know, that the brother says, like, I was going to bring you an apple, and then throws up the kind of, like, rotten apple
after the orgasm.
Right, and the whole family being like, we got to get her out of here.
Because
so much of the Salem witch trial stuff was about, like, kind of banishing unwanted elements of the, like, believing that you could banish unwanted elements of the community through scapegoating particular women.
Yeah.
And saying that they're witches.
Right.
Right, and part of what makes you a witch is, like, being a desiring female subject, essentially.
That is interesting. There is sort of, like, a running thing in there, how they're, like, their mom wants Thomason out of the house.
Yeah.
And, like, she keeps pushing to find her a home, under the guise of, like, we don't have enough food. but there is such a tension between those two, between the mother and daughter.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that she just wants her gone. You know, she thinks she's evil and is the one that, you know, made the baby leave.
Well, she immediately assumes Thomason has stolen the silver cup. She immediately assumes that she's responsible for the witchcraft. I mean, and it's not based on any behavior.
No, not at all. I mean, she seems like a dutiful daughter.
So. Much more so than those fucking twins.
Oh, God, they're annoying. Yeah.
But she clearly has internalized this because she says very early something like when she's praying or talking to God, she's saying, I've broken all of your commandments in my mind.
Right.
In the last week or whatever.
Yeah, it seems like she's struggling with all of that stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to unpack with this movie that I kind of almost get lost in it. For a film that is very slowly paced, very contemplative, very quiet in for most of its running time, they pack so much into this movie.
They really do.
So much to like digest. Everything from like the aesthetics of it and the like extreme level of detail that went into the creating of the movie. Like, have you read anything about like the creation of the sets or anything?
No.
So like, okay, Robert Eggers is like super meticulous about this. So everything that they built the set, but not only did they only use the materials that were available at their time, they only used tools that they used at that time. So that it was like 100% accurate.
That's
and
really
then
cool.
He only shot with with natural light and candlelight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it creates a bleakness that like really adds to the sense of dread and isolation and these little islands, pockets of light in like a world that is so dark around them that like lends mystery to like, you know, just some trees or open spaces because they're just so cut off from everything.
Yeah, no, they do a really effective job of making the woods seem really creepy when they, you know, really aren't, but they make them seem that way. And I also really like that they really made conscious decisions about like when to show us a lot and when to pull back and not show us much at all. Like when the young boy meets up with the witch, who's now looks all young and beautiful because of, you know, taking the baby, you know, they go in for the kiss and then it cuts away. And then we see him later coming, you know, back home and he's all, you know, possessed or whatever it is that's going on with him, but you don't see what the witch does to him. And then there are other scenes where they really focus in on it, like towards the end where the mother thinks that the children have come back and she goes to breastfeed the baby, and then you see her being like pecked in the boob by a crow or a raven.
Does Kate Dickey have some sort of like
I had this thought too
in her in her context, like there must be an uncomfortable breastfeeding scene in everything that
that's
I do.
Exactly what I thought the second it came on screen.
I did too. Or I was like, is this kind of her specialty? Or is this like this part was written and it was like uncomfortable breastfeeding? They're like, we know who to call.
Yeah, the casting agent's like, hold on, let me flip to my uncomfortable breastfeeding section of my Rolodex here.
Very specific typecasting.
Yeah.
I mean, she's great. And the dad is awesome. Great.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but this movie also really defied my expectations. Now, granted, I didn't watch any of the marketing, but I really thought this movie was going to be about this family that is so, like, fundamental, that there was not necessarily a witch, but it was just, like, the paranoia of, like, this imagined witch
that's
causes the family to crumble.
Right.
And that it was going to be sort of this indictment of fundamental religion. And, I mean, obviously, it doesn't work in their favor, but it's not, I feel like it has a very ambivalent attitude toward religion. The fatal flaw is not that they're Christians. It's that the father is like so prideful that he's not able to overcome his pride and remove his family from this dangerous situation, or puts them in the dangerous situation to begin with because of his pride.
Mm-hmm.
And that is ultimately like kind of what costs him and his family, right?
Yeah.
I kept expecting him to turn into, like, the villain from The Crucible, and it never happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he always, even when he's terrified that his children are possessed, like, there is an empathy and a love there for his children that I was not expecting.
Well, for her in particular, right? I mean, he's not able to adequately protect her from her mom.
Right.
Right, and he feels guilty because he didn't speak up in those times when the mom was blaming her for things that not only did she not do, but that he did.
Like,
right.
Like, they went so far down that road in terms of destruction of that relationship between the mother and daughter was because of that fucking cup that he could have prevented had he spoken up. But my point is I think it is a more morally complex movie than I was expecting. And the fact that they're like, yep, no, there's a fucking witch in the woods in the first, like, 5 minutes of the movie, I had to recalibrate my expectations.
Right.
I mean, I think it was great that they almost did both. It's like you've got the real witch stuff happening, the really creepy horror stuff there, but you also have stuff going on within the family just based on religion. Because, like, Thomasin until the end is not a witch, but she's getting blamed for all of this stuff. And so you kind of see how that plays out. But it's not just about that. You also have the supernatural element actually going on.
Yeah. I actually wondered if they were trying to go for leaving enough doubt that she was actually a witch.
Mm.
Right, that she had kind of, because she's, you know, she's a 13, like a teenage girl in this family in this period. Like, it's a farm, there's nothing but labor, like she's watching the baby. Like, if she was the person.
Right. Oh.
Like if there's, like, you know, her full nature comes out, she wants to eat butter and see the world. And
right.
You know, both with the baby and then with the brother, right? Like, if her allowing the brother to kind of cuddle her, like, there are these ways that she's seen as too loose with her desire or anger, all the ways she's breaking the Ten Commandments in her mind. I'm wondering if the filmmakers want there to be a narrative where there's a little bit of doubt that she was responsible for those things all along. Mm-hmm. And that the end is kind of more of a concretization of her being free.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I saw it more as they were, like, showing that she was vulnerable to something like Black Phillip's influence, but
I
think that's a totally interesting interpretation.
I mean, I think you are vulnerable to somebody's influence if you've been the scapegoat all along, and then they're like, okay, well, if you're going to be the scapegoat, I might as well, like, eat some butter and see the world.
Right. Throw some butter on that rotten corn.
I can't believe they skipped the ointment, frankly, after the Hexen thing.
Well, no, they had ointment.
They had ointment?
Yeah, the baby. She mashed up the baby to create the ointment.
Yeah, and then rubbed it all over her body, and that's how she got young, right?
At the end, we never see what happens with the twins, but I assume that's why all them witches are flying, right?
Oh.
That's twin ointment.
Interesting. I also wondered if, I mean, I know this family was alone in the woods, and so maybe that's why they were kind of targeted by the witch or witches, but I also wondered if some of this stuff wasn't happening because Thomasin was there and they wanted her to join them.
Right, if they were kind of interfering in her family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, okay, so I've heard two interpretations of the ending, and I kind of wanted to know where you fell. Did you feel like at the end when Thomasin submits to Black Phillip and joins the witches, that it is showing her freedom, and it's like kind of an empowering situation? Or do you think the fact that she has gone from the thumb of her father to the end of the thumb of another male figure as sort of sad and tragic?
Oh, that's really interesting. I mean, visually, it seems like a freedom thing just because of her reaction to what's going on.
Well, I mean, she can certainly indulge in a sensual way that she couldn't before, but she's still beholden to, like, another patriarchal figure.
It's interesting. I kind of think about it as her finding freedom through the thing that she knows is terrible about her, through a thing that's going to give her trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, there's all this kind of way that she's internalized this very Calvinist viewpoint, and she finds freedom from it at the end, but I can't imagine that she doesn't feel conflict-free about that.
Right. Sure. Unless they, like, her floating at the end, metaphorical for maybe, like, leaving all of the weight of repressing herself behind. I don't know if that's true. I'm just picking through, because I hadn't thought about it that way, so I'm just sort of like...
Yeah.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
I think you
are. I don't disagree with you. I'm just, like, trying to wrap my brain around it.
I think there's, like, truth to both of those. You could really read it either way.
I think because I hold the end a little less concretely, I think that I see it more as freedom, and I see it as her internal struggle as opposed to a concrete transfer of power from dad to Black Phillip.
Yeah. I like that better. I don't like to think of it as being tragic. Like, I guess I'm sort of witchy identified in this situation. I identify more strongly with the witches.
That mom? I mean, who can blame you?
Right. God, this is a good fucking movie.
Yeah, I mean, that death scene with the mom was great, where she's like strangling her and then hitting her on the head. I mean, it was really good. It was done.
And die straddling her.
Yeah.
She's got to toss her mom's heavy body off of her. Like that weight.
Right.
I know I mentioned this earlier, but when Black Phillip finally speaks to her, like, ooh, you always expect it to sort of be this gruff kind of demonic voice, and here he's got this like sexy kind of Barry White-esque voice, and
yeah,
I found that to be really cool, like a different decision to make.
Yeah, I like that they went for temptation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Seduction and temptation. The things that he says to her are so upsetting, but like so beguiling. Like if somebody was just like, Matilda, would you like to live deliciously? Do you like the taste of butter? Like, that is not someone you like have a second drink with.
Rachel. No. I mean, you weren't a teenage goth, so, you know, there are dudes that actually true. Talk to you that way, unfortunately.
There's a lot of talk about whether or not this movie is scary, and if a horror movie has to be scary. And maybe I'm in the minority, but I found this movie to be pretty scary. Not in a, yeah. like, I'm climbing the walls, you know, like, insidious kind of way.
Right.
Much more of a creeping sense of dread, and then... Like, I get chills when I think about Black Phillip. Like, Black Phillip scares... goats freak me out anyway. I'm not super into goats.
And did you not like him, like, on two legs running around for a while and being huge? And
yeah. Uh-huh. We took out the dad, who was buried in his woodpile. I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, that was really great.
That was an ironic death for Pops.
Yeah.
All right, anything else we want to talk about The Witch before we wrap up?
Oh, I just had one thing. You know the rabbit where, like, the dad and the brother are out hunting and they see this rabbit that the dog perks at? Oh, it's my heart, too, the poor doggy.
Oh,
yeah.
And then they see it, like, a couple more times throughout the movie, and then it's never... They never really deal with that or wrap that up in any way.
Well, I assumed it was either one of the witches had changed shape or it was a familiar.
Right, yeah. Right.
Because it does seem to kind of, like, mock them a little bit. Like, that's not your regular rabbit.
No.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sassy rabbit right there.
Yeah. I liked that rabbit.
It was cool. I mean, they focused it on its face and really kind of made it look a little creepy and foreboding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was something... I mean, for people who thought this wasn't a scary movie, I think that was part of it for me, was, like, the all-natural light and the camera being way too close to things. Was really effective.
You're like, save a little room for the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. But like, you know, I know people are talking about this as not a scary movie and there aren't jump scares and things like that, but it's like my nervous system was engaged immediately.
Yeah, I mean, there are.
Yeah. I mean, my nervous system was like... And especially, you know, in a movie where, in an American film where they're grinding up a baby in the first 10 minutes like that.
I was like, yeah, they went for it.
Yeah.
And it happens so early, I feel like that part gets kind of forgotten in the shuffle. But it's actually a pretty intense opening.
Yeah.
No, but I think it sets the tone for, like, you know, what this family is afraid of is what you can't see.
Yeah.
It's like the mystery of what's not seen. And so I think that's why the baby being killed and Black Phillip not being actually seen while he's talking, like, all of those things, like, the audience gets into the same mindset that the family's in that particular way. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Sorry, I'm actually getting goosebumps. So I'm just thinking about Blackville talking again.
Yeah, I mean, there are upsetting scenes and it's chilling and it's dark. It just doesn't have some of those things that I think people have kind of come to expect from horror movies, maybe, you know, like stuff that you see in Saw or whatever, or even The Conjuring. You know, it's a really different kind of horror movie, but I think it's just as effective at creeping you out and show really intense images.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know it's a quieter kind of movie, but I can't think of another horror villain, I guess you'd say, that has gotten under my skin in the way that Black Phillip has. The last...
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, he's a problem for me. Like, I can't think about him at night.
Oh, that's crazy. Like,
I get scared. When I was a kid, the stories that we would hear, like when they would have, like, you know, the ex-Satanist come and speak to our group.
Jeez.
I kind of love that.
I wish you could have seen him, too. Dude is probably, like, some polyamorous IT guy somewhere. Yeah, he would tell stories about, like, throwing, like, using Ouija boards and then throwing them in the fireplace. And they would scream, like, with 1,000 voices would scream from the fireplace. And, like, you know, you have to be saved if you try to use the name of Christ or the Bible to protect you from demons, because, like, if you don't, then it has no power and it'll throw the Bible at you physically. Like, stuff like that. Like, it was
what
very...
What kind of D&D rules shit is that? About, I mean, like, fighting the devil?
I don't know. It's what
I'm sorry,
I
it's so blasphemous. I just totally grew up, like, not in a church.
It's
so
listen, as...
So
as,
it sounds
as
odd
a
me.
Like a 23 hours out of the day atheist.
Except like for the hour that Black Phillip
yeah, except for when I'm kicking
you.
It with old Black Phillip. yeah, it sounds crazy to me too, but like, I think hearing those stories at a formative age have left like a little grain of superstition in me.
Sure.
That just is totally triggered by Black yeah. Phillip and movies like this.
Yeah, and that's why I think that
which
religious horror movies are more effective for people who grew up in church than people. I mean, they get you at a different level.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, because I didn't grow up with any religion. And
did these like, get you in the same way?
No, not like they do Rachel, not at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of love it, though, because...
Sure.
I watch horror movies in the hope that I'm going to be scared.
Yeah, right.
And I tend now, I like the gore because it still gives me a reaction of some kind. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. scary movies, like they can be interesting, but I don't get a visceral response. So to know that there's still some subset of horror movies that can mess with me on like, a fear level is good.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely one of them. So The Witch, thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Oh, recommend yeah. people see it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's move on to Zombie Girls Beginner's Guide. This is Jody's idea originally. I think it's freaking great. So tell us a little bit about what this is. Refresh everybody's memory, and then we'll dig into it.
Yeah, because it's been about 7 years since we've did a ZGBG. So we had this idea just because there are so many movies out there, and we get to talk so rarely that there must be movies that we just will never get to, probably. So we figured, you know, we'll pick a category every once in a while, and just if you were going to watch three movies, just throw them out there. What would you recommend to someone to watch to get into whatever slasher movies or zombie movies? So we've done what, haunted house movies and zombie movies and kid friendly horror. I think we did like a Final Girl one. So to tie into the theme of today, we thought we'd do Beginner's Guide to Witchy Movies, and I guess maybe some of these we might revisit at some point. Some of them we might have done already in past episodes. I don't know about you guys, I found it very, very hard to pare this down to three.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got a bunch of honourable mentions. And when I was Googling lists of witchy movies, something's kept coming up that I didn't think would really count, but I guess maybe you can extend it as far as you like. Like things like Drag Me to Hell came up, and I thought, I wouldn't have thought of that as a witchy movie, but I guess you could maybe say it is, and I really like that movie, but I haven't counted it because I didn't feel like it's kind of witchy enough, if you like. But some honourable mentions, The Craft and The Witches of Eastwick and Mario Bava's Black Sunday, Rosemary's Baby, even Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I wanted to pick all of these, but just didn't have room. So my top three, in no particular order, are The Lords of Salem. So go back to episode whatever that was, 28, 29, where we talked about The Lords of Salem, because I really, really like that, maybe more than it deserves. I have issues with Rob Zombie, and I'm not a massive fan of his movies in general or his music even, but Lords of Salem I loved, so that's number one.
Agree.
Thank you. Suspiria is my next one.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, it's great. And I have a certain love for it because not long ago I saw it on a big screen in a church with Goblin playing.
Oh my gosh.
It was fantastic. So I love, love, love Suspiria. And apparently, well, they've been talking about remaking it for years. Whether it'll happen or not, I don't know. We'll see. But the original version is second to nothing. I love that film. But my top witchy movie, which I didn't see on any lists. I don't know how well known this movie is. It's from 1945, I think. It's called The Day of Wrath, and it's directed by Carl Theodore Dreyer, who directed The Passion of Joan of Arc. And it's amazing. It's about, the witch burnings and everything. And it's a small story about an affair during this time. But it's so good, and it's so beautifully shot, and it's creepy, and it's got this weird... I mean, obviously, it's not very sexually explicit or anything like that, but there's this really, like, erotic scene where... nothing's happening, but everything's happening, and nothing is being said, but everything's being said with glances. And it's just amazing. So it's a Danish movie. It has subtitles. Day of Wrath from the 40s. Check it out.
Oh, sounds good. How about you, Ariel?
I actually completely forgot about this section.
No!
So I am woefully unprepared, but I'm just going to keep blaming everything on the medication, so yay.
All right. How about you, Matilda? What's your list?
So I tried to go off what I thought, because I know you guys are going to cover the kind of like classic horror stuff a little bit more. So I tried to go with three witch things that I really love, but that probably aren't in the general genre category.
Awesome.
The first being The Witches from 1990, which is, do you know what I'm talking about?
That one with Angelica Houston?
Yeah, so it's based on one of my favorite Roald Dahl books.
Oh, yeah.
And all
right.
The creature work is the last movie Jim Henson made before he died.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, so when, do you remember the witches are bald and they're wearing face masks? So when they take it off, I mean, it's not a good movie. But it's a lot of fun. And it's really good for kids.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because it's the Norwegian grandmother. Do you remember this? So this kid, his parents die. He has to go live with his Norwegian grandmother. And his Norwegian grandmother has this, like, all this witch mythology. She's like, if you ever see a woman and you can't see her hands. And she doesn't have toes. And all witches are bald. And all witches think that children smell like dog droppings. Do you remember this? Like, there's all this. It's
vaguely.
Great.
I mean, I saw this as a kid, so.
And they did such a good job of getting characters who look like Roald Dahl illustrations.
Oh.
In this movie. It was really impressive. The second one actually was Witches of Eastwick.
Oh,
because,
cool.
I mean, it's just, I watched it again this week, and two things I will say. One, it struck me about 20 minutes in, like, oh, this is Paranormal 9 to 5.
Like, it is Paranormal 9 to 5. It totally
right?
is.
Right, and you have a singer and kind of a ditz and, you know, somebody. Yeah. But also, one of the things, I rewatched it this week, and one of the things I really loved is that all the women are kind of repressed at the beginning, and the more kind of sexually empowered and then generally empowered they get, it's made in 1987, their hair expands through the entire movie until the end. They're just wearing like kind of drag level heads full of extensions. It's really incredible.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and then the third thing that I would say, it's not a movie, but the second season of American Horror Story.
Oh.
I actually think... Is it the second season?
No. Asylum is season two.
Oh, no. Then
Coven
it's three.
Is three.
It's three.
Yeah.
I actually really... That was my favorite of that franchise. And I actually think that... I think all of these, all of my picks are maybe because I've been watching the Christina Ricci, Lizzie Borden Chronicles, and I'm like, where is the camp? I want good camp. So all of these...
You have like a camp deficit. You
I
need
do.
To know.
Yeah, I do. And all of these, I think, are pretty effective in that way.
Yeah, I liked that season of American Horror Story. I thought Coven was pretty good. I mean, none of them are perfect, but it was good.
No, but that was the one that I kind of enjoyed in a in a not necessarily serious way. But
yeah,
a,
it definitely
I
has that
thoroughly
camp
enjoyed
factor.
It. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those are my three.
Awesome. Those are cool. Great selections. All right, so mine, I tried to go slightly off the beaten track because I thought for sure somebody's going to hit all the top ones. I thought for sure somebody would have The Craft, but I got an honorable mention, so yeah. I will second that honorable mention. It's in my alternate section because I figured some of mine would get taken. So Lords of Salem made my list, but I'm going to bump it because it's already been covered. I also love that movie. Instead, I'm going to go with The Wicker Man, which I think it's not straight up witches. It's like that pagan experience is close enough. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know everybody knows the end of The Wicker Man now, but like when you first see that without it having been spoiled, that is such a like gut punch of an ending. And I love anything that's about like weird cult. So I don't know. It speaks to me. I want to go and like do weird dances and try to seduce virgins and then put ribbons around poles.
Rachel.
I mean, like some people want to be astronauts. I want to do that. So quit judging me. I actually put Drag Me to Hell because I love the Gypsy Witch. I think
she's amazing in that.
Yes, great.
I mean, like, even just sort of, like, the way her appearance, like, they definitely are going for, like, a traditional old school witch with that. And that movie is just fun. It's just tons and tons of fun. You love it, too? I need to revisit it. I haven't seen it in years, and I need to go back and...
Oh, it's so, like, it's all mouth. It's really... Everything's going in her mouth, and, oh. it's so good and gross. I love it.
Yes. Put this one in you as fast as you can because it is good. All right. I apparently need to get laid. I don't know what the fuck my problem is. Okay, so my last movie is actually maybe my favorite, and I know it's not technically a good movie, but I love this movie. And it is The Warlock, starring one Julian Sands and his illustrious golden ponytail. It's like this witch, and back in the witch trial era, is being hunted by a witch hunter, and then Satan, like, saves him and throws him forward into the future to meet Laurie Singer. Do you remember her?
Oh, of course.
From Footloose?
Yeah.
Yeah! Okay. Well, I feel like this is actually her crowning achievement. I mean, Footloose is great and everything, but Warlock, you know what I'm saying?
Dare you talk about Footloose.
I remember when we saw the remake and you cried in the theater. You were... Anyway, so, like, you know, this guy has to follow him into the future. So it's sort of like these, like, people from Salem era, like, in modern day fish out of water situation. But I love all the weird witchcraft stuff in this movie. Like, at one point, they find the witch's footprints, and so he, like, hammers nails into the witch's footprints, and, like, it's like a voodoo doll situation, and it's good stuff. Anyway, so if you have not seen Warlock, or it's been a long time since you revisited it, that is a great place to get into the whole witchy witch.
Yeah, I had never seen it, and then you recommended it to me one time, like, 5 years ago.
Oh, really? Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. Definitely people should check it out.
Have you seen it, Jody?
I've never seen it, no, but I can't see Julian Sands and not think of tarantulas, so...
Tarantulas? Why? Wait,
yeah, why is that a question? Oh, right.
Oh, is he in Arachnophobia?
Yeah, he's the doctor guy, the, you know, scientist spider guy.
Oh. I saw it one time at a slumber party when I was, like, 10. And I was like, yuck, spiders, no thank you.
Yeah. Right?
I just remember John Goodman in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, Julian Sands for me, I go to Boxing Helena. Like, that's where I thought you were going to go with it. Have you seen, I guess you can't.
No, I never have seen that either. But it did get me a point in a pub quiz recently because the question was something like, who was in all of these movies but not the Twin Peaks movie? And we were arguing as to whether it was Sherilyn Fenn or Lara Flynn Boyle. Oh. I was like, well, I've never seen Boxing Helena, but I'm pretty sure that's Sherilyn Fenn.
Yes, it is.
I was right.
Mm-hmm. I was right. Getting turned into the Venus de Milo.
Yeah.
That is a weird fucking movie. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so...
I think I've had the ending ruined for me, though.
Well, I don't want to ruin it for you in case you ever watch it, because I feel like you would like it.
I feel
like it's a Jody movie.
Uh-huh.
Because you like a little, like, sort of... You like a little kink in your movie. Oh, and this thanks. Is a very kinky thanks. Film.
Okay.
It's very kinky.
It is very kinky.
I mean, all right. So anyways, that's it for me. All right. I like Zombie Girls Beginner. This is fun.
Yeah. It's a good way to reel off some movies and just chat about a couple of things that we wouldn't necessarily make time to talk about in a full episode. I like it.
Out.
I'm glad you like it too.
All right. So that's it for reviews. This is the point where we'd probably talk about listener feedback, but we don't have any.
Okay.
So I'll just do my call out. If you guys have any questions or would like to contribute to the show, let us know what you thought of The Witch or Haxton. You can email us at rachel@zombiegirls.com or you can leave us a voicemail. We like voicemails. Mm. You can reach us at 1-678-694-7759 or 678-6Z Girls. Mm. Also, probably the best way you can support us if you want to is to leave us a review on iTunes. Okay, so that's it for that, which just, I guess, leaves the Netflix pick. I have to say, I was looking through the Netflix. It seems like it used to have a lot more stuff. And I don't know if it's just the way the search works or what, but I feel like it's got about half the inventory it used to.
No, I totally agree. My niece was having her birthday party yesterday, and she wanted, like, horror movies for them to watch in the middle of the night. So she called me and was like, you know, what should we watch? And I was looking on Netflix to see horror movies, and it's really hard, especially because even some of the good ones they have out there, they only have, like, the third installment, you know, not the first.
And there used to be, like, a whole section of just, like, weird shit.
Yeah.
Like, from the 60s that is, like, gone. I don't see it on there anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, you used to be able to watch, like, you know, The Baby or, you know, Spider Baby. I don't know why these are all baby related, but those are the ones that came to my mind. And those seem to, like, all be gone, but it just seems like the catalog is much, much smaller. Mm. That being said, there is one good movie I can definitely recommend. Have any of you guys seen the movie Honeymoon?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, you have seen it?
Yeah.
It's okay. All right. So I picked this for a few reasons. One, because I absolutely love this movie. And also because it is directed by a woman. It's directed by Lee Janaic, who I think this may be her feature film debut. And it is great. It stars Rose Leslie, who most people know from Game of Thrones. She is Ygritte. And Harry Treadaway, who I think probably most people will recognize him from maybe Attack the Block. He's sort of like the white dude that's come to the hood to buy some weed and like listening to rap because he's so hard until like a person of color gets in the elevator, then he's less hard. Yeah, so but in this they play a couple on their honeymoon. So I'm going to read you really quickly the synopsis from Netflix. Newlywed bliss turns to paranoia after bride B sleepwalks outside a remote honeymoon cabin and scares groom Paul with her increasingly odd behavior. So the movie starts off and they're like the perfect couple, like to the point where it's kind of annoying. It's a little saccharine because they're just so in love, and they decide for their honeymoon, instead of like going on some like fancy trip, they decide they're gonna go and stay at their family's cabin. It's off season, so they're totally alone, and at first everything is great, and then one night she disappears. He goes outside to find her and he finds her shredded nightgown, and he goes back home and she's there and she's like, sorry, I'm fine, everything's fine. But starting the next day, her personality has totally changed and she can't remember things, and it just gets increasingly weirder and weirder and weirder. And he's like trying to figure out what the heck happened to her. It is great. It is really, really good. Even though they start off kind of annoying and cutesy bootsy, like you do actually begin to really invest and care about the characters. There's some awesome body horror in it for you.
Okay.
So yeah, I highly recommend Honeymoon. And I'm guessing, can you back me up on this one, Jody?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's some good body stuff, especially lady body stuff, which we don't get a lot of in movies, and it's weird and creepy, and there's a cool mystery to it. Yeah, I thought it was really good. I recommend.
Yeah, definitely. Oof, that thing on the bed.
Yep. Whoa. The thing. Yep.
Okay, awesome. Well, I guess that's it. Thank you everybody so much for joining me. You know, I never get sick of hearing all your voices, and
yeah,
I really appreciate you guys being on the show, man. I love you.
Thank you.
And thank you to the audience. Thank you so much for listening and sticking with us over our long hiatus. And for those new people, welcome. We're happy to have you. Send us an email. Review us on iTunes. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Do you ever have this where your mouth is moving faster than your brain because you've drank too much coffee?
Yeah, you just end up mumbling crazily.
That is what I'm experiencing right now. Oh my god, we recorded the Steve/Matt cast on Friday. I still feel hungover.
Oh no.
I drank so much bourbon and I am horrified. It is like, I mean, my chance of being a president is over. Yeah.
The Steve cast is my favorite podcast ever.
I like it too.
The bone clone.
You use it to like make a like a copy of your penis so that you can.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah,
you can make like a personalized dildo,
right?
Based on anyone's peen with the bone clone.
Because there's a company called Bone Clones in the anatomy world.
Oh, this is not that kind of bone clone.
You know, very unusual skulls or very unusual femurs. That's not that.
Well, I mean, it's maybe a very unusual bone, but it's, I don't know. Do you want to live deliciously? Wow. She's my familiar. Shut up and Google it. And stop shouting pegging. People just want to have their fucking roast lamb. Shut up. Okay, sorry. That totally sidetracked. Who's rocking the micropeen? That's what I want to know. Apparently, I still am drunk. Oh,